right, everyone, welcome to episode 6 now of the Backyard Banter podcast. 6 episodes, that's a lot. So thanks everybody for tuning in and everything. Today we've got a guest that I'm really excited to talk to. It's Eric Stoner from, I don't really know what to introduce you as now, Eric, or where you're from, but I think that's kind of the point of our discussion tonight. So, but I want to welcome you to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I pretty much am unaffiliated right now. I still pop up on Matt Waldman's site, on Matt Waldman RSP, every once in a while, but not making content too often, just kind of roaming Twitter and entertaining that way.
Yeah, still running Twitter for sure. So if you don't know Eric, Eric is somebody that's been some that I've followed for years. Like, I mean, I remember following you back in like when I was in college, a junior, senior in college, back when you were really writing a lot of content. And Eric is one of, Eric and I are, like, full disclosure, we're friends. Like, we go out to bars and stuff here in Southern California. We both live in LA. Like, we see a lot of each other. So I don't say this just to suck up, because I don't really think I have to. You know, Eric is one of the smarter, like, football people that I know. Like, he knows his shit. When he says something, like, I listen to it, especially about, like, defensive players and quarterbacks and stuff like that. Like, Eric is a good writer and knows football, but like you said, you're not doing any work right now. And I mean, just to start off, we'll get into that a little bit later, but I mean, what's your background? Like, what's your history with football? Like, how did you become like obsessed with this stupid sport that we do?
Well, I'm not sure that I really had much of a choice. My dad was a football coach. He grew up in Idaho, played high school football. He actually had an offer from Boise State, but he ended up joining the military like right when he turned 18, right outside of high school. So he was stationed in California. That's how he ended up meeting my mom. So I was on football fields at a very, very young age, and then started playing when I was 7. I played all the way through high school, from 7 to 17. So I had 10 years of playing just as a kid. I had a couple of like Division III offers and like partial scholarships and everything, but I wasn't really interested in playing, like moving to Nebraska and playing for some D3 fucking school in Nebraska, basically paying to continue playing football. I kind of thought that it was hustling backwards. So I got accepted to San Diego State, and I was ready to just go have a good time basically. And then, after that, like I stayed in San Diego for a year. I didn't really have anything to do with football during that time. I lived in San Diego for 2 years. San Diego State asked me to kindly leave after 1 year. I had a little bit too much fun. So I ended up staying in San Diego for another year, just kind of living out there, and then ended up moving up back home and started coaching high school football. Like pretty much as soon as I got back, I jumped right into it. So I coached high school football for a few years. And then started really like it. I wasn't going to be a teacher, obviously. So coaching high school football is a tough gig if you're not actually a teacher and in it like that. So because it's just hard to work it out with scheduling and with your real job and everything of that nature. So ended up giving that up after a few years. And then, yeah, really, like, I was always really, really into football, like, had an online presence in football. It sounds like pretty much everybody, like, all the fantasy guys you've had on pretty much have the same story, where, like, if you really are this much of a nut about it, you'll find all the other dorks on football forums. I mean, football Twitter is basically just, like, the evolution of what the old football forums eventually turned into. I mean, I would venture to say that most people that are really, really into football on Twitter were like either posted on their team's message board before there was Twitter, like on their team's message board. The big one that I was on the draft countdown message board for a long time. That's actually where I ended up meeting Parsons and Jinx and some of the other guys that are on draft Twitter. And that was like 2006, like 10 years ago, a long time ago. So a lot of the cats on Twitter that are on football Twitter have known each other for a long, long time, surprisingly. So, and yeah, I mean, like I said, the draft was always the big thing that I always really liked in terms of the football entertainment, you know, not actually me playing or coaching or doing whatever. The draft was always like the big, big thing that I cared about and was really, really into. And so, and then just ended up kind of going from there. That's basically how it started.
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny part to me, because I guess I was never around during like the forum age, or I wasn't as like...
Yeah, it's a little bit before your time, huh?
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, I guess I hopped like into the football Twitter scene, I guess, like around... It was like after I graduated college when I started like Backyard Banter, and like I was following from a different account that will never be discovered for my years during college. Actually, that is funny, because the guys from work did find, like at NFL, did find it a few months ago, and that was
found the personal,
like the personal account.
Yeah.
And like, I totally, that's a whole nother story, but yeah, embarrassing, awful. So I used to like follow all you guys from that account, but it wasn't until like, yeah, in like 2013 is when I kind of came around, and so I was never in on the forums and anything like that. So that's a whole nother part of like the culture that I don't understand. But so, okay. So we know how you kind of got into the whole football thing, but like, what was your like first impetus to start writing about it? Or like, who was the first one to reach out to you and be like, hey man, like, you know, come write for us, or how did that start?
It's kind of a funny story. Like I said, I was on the Draft Countdown forums at the time, and Twitter was already around. This is like 2011, I think. Yeah, it was 2011. Okay, so I hadn't really been into the draft for a few years because I had been coaching, so it made it tough to keep up with college football and everything of that nature, because usually, like, games are on Friday night, and then you're back in the office on Saturday, like, grading the game from the night before, and then scouting out your next week's opponent and doing all that charting. And it's basically like an all-day affair trying to do it fucking hungover, like after a Friday night in a dark office with nothing but a projector on.
So that sounds terrible.
I didn't really see like those few years of college football. Like, I remember when the Jags drafted Tyson Alualu, and I had no idea who the fuck he was. Like, they took him 10th overall, and he was like, it was like a surprise pick at the time. People were projecting like second round, maybe late first round, and they take him 10th overall, which is funny too, because like in today's like draft Twitter world, like he would have been like somebody that people would have been super super hyped on, because he had crazy workouts and everything coming out of Cal.
It's
actually really funny, like, looking back at it. So I really didn't know that much about the draft, but the 2011 class I had kind of gotten back into, because I had just put in, you know, my resignation that I wasn't going to be able to coach anymore because I couldn't make it work with my schedule. And so I absolutely hated Blaine Gabbert as a prospect. And there was this dude on this forum that I would always argue about him with. Hated Gabbert as a prospect. And then the Jags end up taking him, fucking trading up for him, no less. Like, I remember watching that draft and just walking outside, and like, just lighting up a cigarette and turning the TV off and, like, wanting to scream, man. It was
In case you haven't picked up on this, if you're listening, Eric is a Jags fan, I think, or like, are you guys on a break right now, or what's these?
We're on a break. We're not really speaking right now. I'm hoping that that they can get their life together. But you know, they always end up calling on. They always shooting that "Hey, big head" text on Sunday, and you always end up answering back. So,
yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Speaking from my experience, sometimes they go on a Super Bowl run and then you really think they've changed, but nothing's really changed.
Nothing. Yeah. People, teams, players, coaches, nobody really ends up changing. But yeah, so they ended up taking Gabbert, and I remember being so pissed off and like just getting mad online, arguing with people and shit like that. And people would be like, "What the fuck do you know? Like, you're just some dude on a forum." And I remember that just being the impetus to where I was like, all right, I'm going to start, you know, making a name for myself doing this, I guess. Like, I didn't really have big aspirations to be big in like media or anything. If anything, like, I really, like, when I was younger and everything, I wanted to become a scout, and then quickly realized as I got older that I knew that was not going to be something that was in the cards for me. It wouldn't have worked for me. Like, it would be very, very difficult for me personally to do that job for that type of money and things of that nature. It's not a glamorous job, and you have very, very little say so of what actually happens with anything. You're basically just gathering information on dudes. It's like I said, it's not glamorous or fun. But so yeah, I was just like, all right, well, I'm gonna start, you know, making a name for myself doing this. And at that time I was also like talking to the original owner of Draft Breakdown, because I think that was the first year that Draft Breakdown started making their cut-ups and their videos and everything. So he was the first guy I started talking to. He ended up selling the site to the current current co-owner Aaron. And so I started like cutting up videos for them and, you know, writing articles and things of that nature. And that's right when I discovered Twitter too, was right around 2011. So I had this new like fresh outlet to get all these takes off. So, and my Twitter following built pretty quick. After that, Josh Norris was the first one to offer me like my first paid like writing gig, and he was just like 50 bucks an article, I think, for once a week at Roto World. And that's when my Twitter following really, and my brand, I guess, really started to grow within the draft world. And then, you know, I just kind of did freelance work from like here and there. I ghost wrote some stuff for some bigger websites. I'm not going to say like what website or who I did ghost writing for, but ghost writing does happen in the draft community. Mm-hmm. And it, like I said, I'm not begrudging that or anything. A lot of the big sites like just will dump a shitload of work onto one or two people, like, and it's like you got to get this stuff done, cranked out fast. So I did some of that. I did like some freelance stuff for Bleacher Report, helping them like do a bunch of their draft profiles. But for a lot of the jobs and gigs that I had, I would always like, I'd start off really good. Like, I think Sigmund talked about this with himself. Like, I'm a very, very fast starter, and then I get bored very quickly. Like, even with draft classes, like, I'll get into the class super, super quick and like kind of go through it and everything, and then I'll just kind of get like burnt out doing it. And so none of the gigs I did lasted long term, or even like I would even like, you know, say, you know, I've had enough doing this. Like, I'm not really interested in doing this anymore, and I don't want to hang you guys up or make commitments that I, you know, can't keep with and everything. So, yeah, I mean, that was after that, right around, I think it was for like right in between the 2013 class and the 2014 class, Andrew Parsons and I, that's when we decided to make the Draft Mecca site, and I was going to try to be more behind the scenes and like editing people's stuff and, you know, trying to like, I wasn't planning on making a ton of content for the site, and neither was Parsons. It was just kind of like, whenever we felt like it, we could throw something up, and we wanted to get a bunch of good younger writers, you know, younger people and the young crew coming up, who you were a part of. You wrote for Mecca, and there was a bunch of other guys that are starting to, you know, like I said, it wasn't a long-term project. We kind of deaded the site after a year. And yeah, just kind of watch my kids' wings grow has been the fun part of that.
So kind of going back to like when you were with, you know, like Bleacher Report and Roto World and stuff, like that's, I guess, when I first heard of you. And like, you know, you definitely had a lot of like clout and, you know, respect within like people, like, you know, bigger name people, like you said, Josh, like writes for Roto World, and like Doug Farrar, who's at Sports Illustrated now. I think he was at Yahoo at the time. Like, you know, people definitely like respected what you do and like still do. So I guess kind of the real thing I want to hit on with you tonight, and that I want to convey to the audience, like what you like described there up until like the Mecca point looked like a clear, you know, kind of upward trend towards like kind of how things start, like, for example, like things started for me, like, you know, writing freelance for a few places, doing some little this and that stuff, and then like steadily getting more and more opportunities. Now, like, I have a, you know, like a legitimate job within the industry, but your journey kind of tapered off there. And that's really the point of why I want to have you on tonight, is I kind of want to hit into like what happened to kind of either illuminate to you like this isn't really what I want to do, or like the process of it all, like, so kind of hit on like let's dig into that.
Okay, so I get there wasn't really one catalyst or big event that made me think, oh, you know, I don't know if I really want to do this. Like, people would always gas me up and tell me, you know, you can go as far doing this as you want to go. Like, Matt Waldman has always told me and really supported me like that and everything. Like, and he's not just, and with him, I know he's not just saying that to gas me up. Like, he tells, yeah, like things that he actually hears from people, not just in the media world, but in the actual like NFL, like the NFL. I'm not like saying this to toot my own horn or anything, but I know that they know who I am, and they pay attention to my work.
I can also, just so it's clear that you're not pumping yourself up, I can also confirm that that is true too.
Right. So, like I said, it wasn't really one catalytic event. I just, people that have always followed me have known about this. Like, I don't really have too much of a filter. And I like tweeting about whatever I like to tweet about or whatever. Like I let things about myself be known. You know, I don't like completely expose every intimate detail of my life or whatever, but it's like I give enough to where like my audience knows who I am without really knowing who I am, if that makes sense. Like I said, not giving away like every intimate detail of my life. But so I was and I've always been like this, where I was always just kind of turned off by how do I put this? The enforcement of like professional culture in a very free, like free and open space. Like for the people that actually are use like have to use Twitter for work, I mean, I guess I understand it, but the majority of us are not on there for that, you know? It's more than it's, I mean, it is an information medium, but like more than anything, it's an entertainment medium. And that's something that's a quote like about the NFL that always really resonated with me too. It was like, and I forgot who it was that said it, but they said that the NFL is not in the football business. They're in the entertainment business. So, and I'm not trying to say like I'm trying to be this a Twitter personality or anything of that nature, but like I said, just the enforcement of like a super professional culture and like I said, in a free and expressive space has always turned me off. With authority is another problem that I've always had, or and just like in terms of having to have like a clockwork of content that needs to get out and working on that type of schedule is just not my cup of tea. Is like football, that creative side of football was always just something that I like to pick up and play with and then leave it alone when I need to get away from it. Because like I said, I've been around it since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. I've been around football. It's been a huge and impactful part of my life. So, like I said, something that I always tell people when they ask me this, actually, I should have given you this quote earlier, is the thing that I tell them is that hobbies a lot of the time are, or passions, I mean, passions a lot of the time are best left as hobbies. Like when you have something that you really do love and it's your baby and everything like that, when it truly becomes work for you and it becomes like this regimented, structured, I don't know how else to describe it, but it's like that was just something that never really appealed to me. So it was never something that I seriously like tried to pursue and make like a full-time thing. I like having my work stuff separate from like the things that I really love and enjoy. So I mean, that's why I really never, why it never turned out like that. Like, I ended up, the 2013 class, the really, really bad class, was that was actually probably a pretty huge factor. I ended up like watching 150 guys and never really got super in. Like, I'd write about people and I did scouting reports and everything, but I think when you're one person and you spread yourself that thin, it becomes kind of hard to get a gauge on. Just like it's just, it becomes so formulaic that it's not entertaining or fun or anything like that. Like some of the most fun times I have was when I'll just like throw up a random cut up of a player and I'm not even trying to like, I don't go into it thinking like, okay, I need to figure out this so I can write this and figure out like and like create this content around it. Like I'll just throw on a tape and take some notes and diagram some plays and try to, you know, figure out what the offense and the defense is doing. And that's what's fun for me, is kind of like the reverse engineering of like what teams are doing schematically and things of that nature than actually like pumping out a piece of, you know, this guy has great ankle flexion and he can really skim the corner and he well. So like even in the latest Derrick Henry piece that I did for Matt, then that's, I think that's the only piece that I've done for this class. And it was like, really, it just ended up being like an X's and O's breakdown. And I even said like on the video segment, I was like, there's 1,000 fucking scouting reports that you can go read of Derrick Henry that, you know, I'm not going to tell you anything that you probably haven't read, or if you wanted to go find that information. So it kind of just became like this cool little breakdown of the play of what, you know, the offense was doing and how they were baiting a linebacker and relating it back to boxing. And like I said, I didn't go into it with any preconceived notions, just kind of went, watched the game and went in the lab and created something on the fly.
Yeah, I think that gets lost a lot too. And I can definitely relate to the, like, when a creative process becomes like a schedule and there's like a regiment to it, it really kind of takes the fun out of it. Like, I can definitely say, like, I love my job, but there's a lot of content that I have to make that I don't love making. You know, like 10 weekly sleepers in week 13, I could care less about, you know, I could care less about making that. And it's part of the job, and like, I don't mind it, but I can definitely relate to the idea of like, I agree with you. I don't think people really understand that there's a lot that changes when you go from like having to write on a schedule or create something on a schedule. And there's a big difference in how you end up relating to that as the creator, in my opinion.
Right. And there's actually there's a really, really good story and a good interview about this. Andrew Parsons has always called me the Jay Electronica of football. And for people that don't know or don't listen to hip hop or anything, Jay Electronica, he's this amazing rapper who has like one perfect song that's a single. It's called the Exhibit C, and then like a mixtape's worth of content that he's put out. And like, this dude, people were saying that this dude was going to be like the best rapper ever and save hip hop and shit like that. Like, he had Diddy and Jay-Z, a bunch of people trying to sign him as an artist when he was just like mobbing around cities on, you know, taking buses from cities and performing. And like, so he ends up signing with Jay-Z. He and Just Blaze, who did this interview and was talking about it, created a whole album. Like, Jay Electronica already had most of the album done. Just Blaze put like the finishing touches and, you know, mixing in and arranging the songs and things of that nature. And then he just never ended up dropping the album. Like, and it's probably been close to 10 years, like 8 to 10 years since that whole process was done. And, you know, he just never dropped the album. He actually ended up dating one of the richest women in the world and moving to England and everything. So it's not like he's really pressed to have to do that, you know, for money, like money wise or anything of that nature. But one of the things that Jay always says is, my train's right on schedule, you know. And I think that's like a big thing that resonates with me. And, you know, not that I necessarily believe in like predestination or anything like that, but I think that you as a person, you know, you take on the things that you know you can take on, and the decisions that you make, like, you have a conscious part in them, but there's the unconscious or the subconscious part of your brain that's kind of ruling that too, and knows what you're capable of and what you're not capable of, knowing, like, self-awareness, knowing your strengths and limitations, you know, as a person or as an artist or as a creator or whatever it is. And so, like I said, the train is right on schedule. And going back to that story of Just Blaze and Jay Electronica, like, the best song that he ever made, they made together, the big single that I was talking about, was Exhibit C. And Just Blaze talks about it in the interview. It's like, it was so cool because it was just like one night, the two of us in the studio, and we were like, oh, let's just like, it was an impromptu thing that just kind of happened, a song that happened organically. And it wasn't like Just Blaze was talking about, like, it wasn't like making an album, like, where you go and it's like, all right, we got to make this many singles and we got to make them sound like this and have the radio play kind of formulaic, you know what I mean? Like, how you were talking about with the sleepers and everything. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because you have to do that to pay the bills, basically. Nothing happens without, you know, in the entertainment business, I always say this about TV, like, what you watch on TV, like, the TV companies are looking at that as just, the TV shows are just the things that you watch in between advertisements.
Right.
Right.
You know, you got to pay the bills. Nothing in this world happens for free. So when you actually do have something that you care about and you can kind of, you know, like I said, keep it a passion as a hobby, keep it on the side to where it doesn't really taint that side of it for you, and you never have to go through those formulate processes and where you're taking, you know, art, not necessarily that like this football stuff is art, but like that's one thing, that's one medium of creative expression that I actually like feel competent in and feel like I feel good doing it and everything, and kind of turning that into, you know, into work. And it's not like they still end up becoming work, because, you know, it's, you know, sitting down and writing something or making a video or whatever, it's not a taskless endeavor. But when you can, like I said, when you can kind of just keep it on the side and let it kind of be its own thing that you can come to when you need it, or when you need to get something off, you can. But it never really becomes like, money never really becomes the reason why you're doing it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with that too, like, because before it was my job, you know, writing about football and like watching, you know, charting players, watching tape, you know, that was like my release. And now when your release becomes your job, then what becomes your, you know, your release? It's like, I'd sit at work all day and, you know, before I was with NFL, you know, I'd sit at work all day and be like, God, I wish I was, you know, I wish I could be like at home right now, like, you know, writing an article or something like that. But then when you're at work writing, and you're like, if you don't work in football, like, don't think that you're still not going to hate your job. Like, because you're still going to trust.
It's still a job.
It's a job. Like, I'm still at work, not like on a beach somewhere getting drunk. It's still a job. I'm not going to like it. You know, like, I mean, like I said, I love my job, but there are definitely days when I'm ready to, you know, shut the computer by noon and go home, you know, but you can't, because it's not how it works. And so, like, make no mistake that there will be times when you're frustrated that you're the thing that you used to escape from the stresses of your job are actually the stresses of your job. So
yeah, that's a really, really good way of putting it. I really don't know, like, and for, I'm not trying to discourage people. The main thing that I want to get across is that I'm not trying to just, because I know that you're doing this entire series on people that ask you for advice and want to get into the business and everything. So I'm not trying to discourage people from chasing the things that they want to chase. But you're not good, like, you need to go do it so that way you can find out as quickly as possible if it is for you, because you will find out very, very quickly. And I think the way that Matt talked about it, how there's the very small middle class. There's a few guys that make like a ton of money doing it, and they have a very big presence and everything. Like, they can make a super, super comfortable living doing it. And like, kudos, that's awesome. More power to them. There's kind of a small middle class where you can make like decent amount of money doing it and still have like some creative freedom over what you do and everything of that nature. And then there's most of the people do it for very little money or for free, and it never really ends up becoming more than that. And the thing that's interesting about it too is that when you really watch it and everything, like, there's a ton of talented people that are doing it. There's a ton of, in my, like, untalented people that are doing it, that want to do it and are trying to get into it, that, you know, a lot of the time, like, I'll see stuff and I'm just like, I mean, I don't know how to, like, saying it without being super disparaging, but I can kind of come across that way sometimes. But just like, you just don't have, the game doesn't speak to you. Like, the game doesn't speak to everybody. And you can, you know, you can have watched football for as long as you've wanted and like think you really, really understand it and everything, but there's a certain level of where the game like really and truly speaks to you and you understand it, and you, and not only that, but be able to communicate those things. I think that's like, and that's kind of like when I was first getting started out, like, I called myself like a bastardized poor man's version of like Chris Brown and Matt Waldman, Smart Football and Matt, like, where I was really super into the X's and O's stuff more so than like any other part of the game. And I like talking about those things. Even like I said, I never went and played college football or coached college football or anything, but, you know, the game speaks to me, and anybody that, you know, reads my stuff or, you know, interacts with me, like, you can understand that I have that level of understanding about the game. And, you know, some people don't, and like, those are the people that should probably go and end up becoming beat writers and things of that nature. There are, you know, where you're reporting on, that's kind of the weird thing about like how Twitter has become too, where there's kind of been this, like this blurring of what a reporter is and what an analyst is. Like, it's very, very, very strange. Like seeing that blurring of the lines that sort of happened. Yeah. The good thing about it is no matter what your talent level is, you can work hard enough to where you can still find the outlet to do it. Like I said, you can be like, whether it's beat writer or analyst or, you know, the fantasy analyst, there's so many different ways to talk about this game that you don't really like, it doesn't like, even if you may not have that level of understanding where it speaks to you, you can still, there's still things that you can talk about and where you can make a living talking about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And there are definitely different lanes. We've talked about that before on the podcast. Like, I would definitely never be able to be a reporter or, like, you know, write about news or break news or anything like that. There's so much that goes into it that just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Right.
So, yeah, like, that's definitely important. I mean, I don't know what I would call myself or anything like that, but definitely that aspect doesn't make sense to me. And you're right. There are people out there that are – that's one thing that was shocking to me, and I feel almost like stupid and naive, like, looking at it and, like – realizing that I thought this way a while ago, but like, it was shocking to me, like the longer I spent in like football Twitter, like how much people there were that just weren't actually like doing this for a living. Like were like either super small level, like freelancers, or weren't getting paid at all. And were just like on Twitter talking about football, because I think you come into Twitter and you think like all these people that are talking about football and talking very intelligently about it, like all are employed in some way. And like, that's not the case at all. There's, like you said, there's that small range of like a middle class. And then there's a lot of people below that.
Right. And it wasn't always like that either. Cause for a long time there was like, this is pre-Twitter or even early Twitter. Like, unless you started your own independent site or your own independent blog or whatever, there were very, very few online big draft sites. Like I said, there was Draft Countdown, there was Football's Future, there were a couple of other ones that I mean it was so long ago I don't really remember, but there wasn't really that way to get your foot in the door. And that's what's kind of cool about it now, is that there's so many small and independent, it's become so much easier to start up a blog or a network of blogs and things of that nature to kind of get to have that outlet and find and discover talent and everything. I mean, and that's what we were even trying to do with Mecca. Like I said, like it ended up being more kind of us like getting a young group of writers and letting them kind of go to town and write about whatever the fuck they wanted to write about. And we do the editing and help them out and things of that nature and do kind of the back end stuff. But it was more about like finding them in, cause there's a ton of talent that just like, either doesn't get paid or gets paid a very, very minimal amount. And so it's kind of cool just seeing that like the community, the football community, whether it's, you know, fantasy or draft or whatever little corner that you're in, because there's so many like, there's football Twitter and then there's like the million different subgroups. Like it really is like a forum, like even like, okay, like on the Draft Countdown forum, I remember there was like the actual draft forum. There was the NFL forum, the college football forum, and then like the off-topic forum where you talked about everything else, which is basically like what Twitter has become like 90% of the fucking time now, which is great.
Off-topic,
the off-topic parts of the forum were always like the most fun areas. So that's where you like got to talk about cool, funny shit all the time and just kind of waste time and bullshit around and be entertained. Didn't have to be like take it so super serious. So it's
the
just
tough
kinda,
part
it's,
about Twitter is it mixes all that together. Like there's, you know, because I mean, the larger you grow, like you're following, you'll occasionally get somebody that like is annoyed at the, which is so stupid to me, is like that you're annoyed with the fact that they're not only talking about football. Like when I'm guilty of it. Like too, you know, I have my account is associated with my job, but like I'm gonna talk about whatever I want to talk about, you know. And so
right,
it's funny.
Exactly. And just, what other like. I mean, I can't really say this for you because you and I know each other like in real life now, but if you hit that log out button, like none of these people actually fucking exist. That's what's crazy about it. Like you meet and interact with all these people and they become like cool friends and everything, but Like, if something's really bugging you on Twitter or something like that, just hit the fucking sign out button. Like, none of these people are real if you really think about it.
Like, and Twitter's gonna, like, whatever that tweet was that bothered you, it'll be gone. I promise, it'll be gone the next time you open the site, like, and you refresh your timeline. Like, that was hours ago.
Yeah, it didn't even fucking happen. Like, none of this stuff is, it's so silly, like, how serious it's taken sometimes, because it's like football itself is just a stupid game, first of all. Like, and the entire culture of football is so strange, like how it's kind of like this pseudo military fantasy game. Like, you have training camp, which is like boot camp, and just all the nomenclature of it, shotgun and the trench wars and shit like that. Like, yeah. It's so fucking Gold dumb. If you really, yeah. It's really, really dumb if you think about it. Like, it's this, and the NFL takes itself so seriously already. And that kind of like spills over into the media coverage of it. Like, you see like how differently the culture of college, and I'm not saying that college football isn't without its own massive flaws and everything, but one thing, like, it's kind of accepted for kind of the silly spectacle that it is. Like, I would, yes. Like, that's like our, like, what, you know, it's like what it seems like what soccer is in terms of being in other countries, where it's like this crazy just like spectacle of itself, and almost like self-parodying almost. So, and then that kind of spills over into how college football is covered. Like, the college football writers and the bloggers and everything, for the most part, take themselves much less seriously than like most NFL people do, and people that cover the NFL. It's even more pronounced when you see like the NBA guys and the NBA bloggers, and like how the NBA, like how the NBA kind of portrays itself spills over into the coverage of it. And it's just much more relaxed and loose and fun and everything. And then everything kind of tightens back up with baseball. Like, I don't really fuck with baseball at all, but you can just kind of see, like, it's kind of like the same thing about football. Like, it doesn't have that crazy, like, we're a pretend military organization, like how the NFL and football is, but like, still just interested seeing how like the different sports are covered just by how the leagues, you know, make themselves come across, so to speak.
I had never like put that together, but that's so true. Like, just especially just the difference between college football and NFL. And like, cause I really probably like watching a big college football game, like I did, like the national championship, like, and being on Twitter during it is so much more like fun than watching like an NFL game on Sunday, or even like, I mean, the Super Bowl comparatively is never as fun as like a national championship game would be, because I think, like you said, like the writers don't take themselves as seriously. Like, much more coverage goes to like the hilarity of like, you know, like Lane Kiffin doing some dumbass thing on the sideline.
Spectacle of how weird and dumb this whole sport is, like,
yeah.
And just seeing like, yeah, like I said, just it can, I pretty much said all that I can say about it, I think, but
yeah, it's just really funny. Like, it's so funny, and I think that it's funny just because I've never noticed this, like, just, or at least never heard it put into words before. But that's so true, and I don't know. There, to me, like, I always go back and forth between like the frivolity of football in general, and then like especially like covering it, like how pointless that is, and like, wait a second, you know, which is cool. Like, wait a second, this is my job. That's pretty awesome. But at the same time, like, this is my job. Like, am I making a difference in somebody's life and everything? Or like, what's the point of all this? And like, sometimes that's very freeing to be like, yeah, dude, like, none of this matters. Like, you know, people might get mad at me if I say something that they don't like, but like, at the end of the day, like, if I screw something up at my job, like, world's going to keep moving. But then at the same time, that kind of is also, it's a weird balance, because at the same time, that also, like I said, it makes me really question, like, how long do I want to even, like, do I, is like, you know, like you're saying, like, is this really what, sometimes it's like, is this really what I should be doing? Like, should I actually be doing something that's more important? Like, is this really what my destiny is? That sort of thing. So there's a weird balance because of how, like, not, how, because of not, like, inherently not serious it is, but then people take it so seriously. And I actually want to take that and swerve it into kind of a different topic, mostly like still talking about Twitter and like how to handle yourself there, because, you know, like you said earlier, Eric Stoner's account is Eric Stoner. Like, you know, there's no impression management going on there. And it's always been that way. And it actually, like, if, again, if you're listening to this and you don't know Eric, like, you actually had a different account before, the EC Stoner account. And then that, you put the end to that because I think pretty much, you correct me if I'm wrong, because you had like too many followers and you just wanted to start over. And so I guess one thing that I've always remember you saying, like, is that you should take your work seriously, but not yourself. And so I kind of want you to delve into like, how do you see people portraying like themselves on Twitter, and how would you prefer it be done?
I mean, if it's your job, I completely understand, because like one of the first things that I remember, and it was one of those times where I was like, I don't know if this is really going to be for me long-term, is when I first started writing for Josh and for Roto World. And he was like, hey man, like, I'm not telling you like what to do or anything, but you should probably watch it on like saying, like dropping F-bombs and like, dropping F-bombs and some of the things that you tweet, you should probably just like tone it down or everything. And I remember thinking, I don't think I said it to him at the time, but in my head I was like, well, you're gonna like give me a W-2, or are you just gonna, am I an independent contractor where you're gonna fucking 1099 me? And I'm not really an employee. I, like I said, I didn't really say that, but I ended up like thinking it down the line a little bit. But yeah, I mean, with the and as far as the old account, I guess I can talk about this now because everything's done and gone away with. But I ended up getting into some trouble about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And like I said, it was just a better idea for the Twitter account to not be up, period. I'm not going to go into it any more than that. But that was the real reason I took it down. But yes, I had like 8,000 followers at the time I ended up taking it down. And that's just like I said, I never went into this trying to like build a massive audience or anything like that. Like, I wanted to get the respect of people whose work I had always admired and things of that nature. Like, I wanted like my voice to count to them, but I really wasn't trying to like, you know, convince an audience or build like a big audience like that, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, cause I don't have any other social media. I got off Facebook and like 2010, I think, and never got back on it. I mean, I have a Snapchat, but my Twitter account, and it doesn't have my real name on it or anything, is basically like my only social media that I have. So I don't, like I said, I never wanted to be in the public eye, so to speak, and even like having 8,000 followers, like that was not appealing to me. So it was kind of a 2-in-1, so ended up deading the account for that and got to start over fresh. And kind of like, my audience is like cultivated now to where I always used to say that like after 3,000 followers or so, that's when like all hell basically starts to break loose. So I'm kind of right in that zone right now where it's just like the people that follow me are basically like the people who I want to follow me, and I don't really need it or want it to get any bigger than that. Like, I have the people following me that like I interact with and I'm cool with, like in the communities and things of that nature. And, you know, so it's, like I said, it's just an entertainment thing for me more than anything. And so, yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah. That's 3,000. I remember 3,000 followers. Yeah, man.
It's comfortable in that area. It's comfortable. And I know that you tell people like, that you don't ever call them like you don't call, you're not, people aren't annoying you or calling like being mentions pests or anything of that nature. And it's like, that never really like got to me either. Just the idea of that many people that I don't know, like know my name or could like look me up or
yeah,
are following me. It's very, the idea of like celebrity for doing something like I say that is so stupid is like, it's very, very strange to me.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to, like, it is a hard thing to grapple with, because like, especially there, I think the only time like having a lot of followers annoys me is like in season during fantasy season. Cause I get, you know, a bajillion questions. Yeah, like
sitter starts.
Yes.
I fantasy Twitter, the ones that still remember my old account still fuck with me too during football season. And like, yeah, when they get sit or start questions sent, they send them my way because it's not appealing. Like I don't, not appealing to me. I don't, that's not something that is fun.
It's not your thing either. Like,
yeah.
It's not what you're like. You're like, even when you were doing stuff, it was like you're doing draft stuff. So why? But people do that. I mean, they don't care. They'll just, they're looking for a they're just looking for an answer. But yeah, like during the season, like you can't even keep up with that. Like you just go through your. It's so refreshing, honestly. Now being the off season, like even though I have a lot more followers, like I can look at like every tweet that I get pretty much.
Right. You
know? But exactly. During the season, it's like. Maybe like five people are asking me a question I'd actually like to answer, and the other person's like, should I start Mike Evans or Sammy Watkins? I'm like, I don't know. Why are you asking me? Why are you asking me? And I know that's so people get so annoyed at that because they're like, you know, it's your You're job. But no, well, yeah, I mean that all in and of itself, that's a whole nother thing. Yeah, of course, but. Like, you know, should I pick up Buck Allen or this other guy off waivers? I'm like, dude, I don't know, man. Like, do what you want.
Who
like, this is your team. Why do you, I know people, like I said, people get so annoyed because that's like my job or whatever. And it is. Well, not really. That's why I always tell people, like, job's really not to pick your team for you. My job's just to write an article and that you read it and then decide whether you want to do that or not. Like,
right.
And that takes away, like, I don't know, now this is a whole other topic, but like that takes away like the fun of fantasy football to me, is like having somebody else make the consequential decision. Like, I play fantasy football because I get to make the decisions, you know, I get to choose what I want to do and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's a tough thing to deal with, if it's the fantasy questions. But you know, I think that people do really underrate like how taxing like Twitter can be sometimes, because it's, I mean, it is, like you said, like you were saying earlier, like it's easy to just, you know, log out, but at the same time, like people get like kind of caught up in Twitter sometimes, for sure. And, you know, Josh and I were talking about this on the last episode. Like, you know, he's like, sometimes you could be alone for an entire day, but if you're on Twitter enough, it feels like you've been, you know, you like kind of have interacted with people, even though it's like an incredibly falsified form of interaction. But like, is there anything, I guess, that you see like in the draft community? Like, I don't know if I want to call them like mistakes or like ways that you see people interact that like you think is either inadvisable for somebody that is like trying to get their name out there, or like comes off, I guess, is kind of phony, or like what's something, like if you see an account, like, you know, you kind of look through their, like the way they tweet or whatever, like what kind of like rubs you the wrong way, I guess?
I mean, well, it depends. If what would rub me the wrong way personally, I still understand it, because at the end of the day, it's still like football media is very much a people business. You know, yeah. What I mean? It's a people and it's a relationship business. And that's the NFL is the exact same way. It's just there's different avenues of taking to get it there. Like, if you want to work for the NFL, you need to get the fuck off Twitter, first of all. And like, not be giving your draft takes on Twitter. You need to get the fuck off of Twitter and go like trying to get a GA position somewhere and, you know, doing like some really, really shitty coach work while you're going to graduate school. That's the avenue that you need to take if you want to like become a scout or work in an NFL front office or coaching or whatever it is. Now, as far as like football media, like I said, what the things that would rub me the wrong way personally doesn't really matter, because if you want to get into this field, you're going to have to do it anyways. Like, you can't burn bridges. You have to, if you commit to things, you have to follow through with them. You have to work and create work and everything. And I'm not begrudging the work side of it. I've already like said my piece on, you know, taking something you love and making it work. But you have to play the politics game, like any other field or any other job. Like, unless you are really 100% your own boss, you have to play. And even if you are, like if you're a franchisee or whatever, you're still going to have to deal with the corporate side. So it that goes with any field or anything like that. Like, you're going to have to schmooze and you're going to have to promote shamelessly And but I mean, there's really nothing that's special or unique about football media that doesn't really apply to any other job or any other workplace. The thing that bugs me is that, like, Twitter is like I said, it's an expressive medium that, like I said, while it conveys information and everything, that's not what everybody, like, that's not what all of us are here for. We're not all here to be professional and to that. And that's kind of like one of my favorite things, because the football Twitter was very kind of like stuffy and robotic, I would say, before I kind of made me and Andrew Parsons kind of like made our impact and our mark on it. Like, I feel like we helped kind of loosen up the room a little bit. Like, you can make fun of the other writers and, like, know that you guys still have respect for each other and respect for each other's work. Like, you guys can still joke like your boys and, like, call each other out and make fun of your guys' pictures and all that shit that we all do to each other. Like, how you would do with your boys in real life. Like, I don't know anybody that hangs out with their friends in real life and is, like, super proper and, you know, doesn't bag on anybody or anything like that. So, like, I know it's weird for you guys because it's both a professional and an expressive medium. So you guys kind of have to, like, toe that line a little bit more so than others, especially like somebody like you work for the Shield. Like, you technically you are an employee of the NFL. You are representative of the NFL. So, and for all these guys, Josh with Roto World and Matt with Bleacher Report and Dane with CBS, like, all those, they have a very fine line that they got to straddle, which is, like I said, something that personally I could never do because, first of all, like I said, I never wanted to make this like a whole time, my entire life thing. And that's not my purpose and what I'm here for with this whole little small corner of the football world. So, if you're looking to get into it and get into the business and everything, like I said, you're going to have to, you don't have to 100% kiss ass, but, like, don't burn bridges and be a dick to people. Like, you can be lighthearted and have fun and everything and throw out a body bag. But, I mean, some people are going to be more sensitive about it than others. Like, some people be careful who you do that to. But if you don't care, like, if you're just here to have fun and, like, it's a creative medium for you, then go ahead and have all the fucking fun you want, man.
It's like representing the Shield and all that sort of stuff. I think that, like, for me, one thing I like about NFL media, like, and, like, the company that I work for is, like, there is definitely some, like, leeway in what I can, like, I can tweet it. Like, they'll never come to me and be like, "Hey man, you got to tweet more about football." Like, one of the first meetings, like, that I ever had, like, one-on-one with my boss, like, after a few months of working there, you know, I was like, "Hey, like, how am I doing? Like, what are some things I'm doing well? What are some things I can be better at?" And, you know, one of the things she said was like, "Yeah, you tweet a lot. Like, that's a good thing. Like, keep doing that. And, like, just whatever it's about, you know, so just keep doing that." I was like, "Oh, wow, that's a job positive. Okay. Wow. All right. No problem. I'm on this thing 24/7, you know, like, so that's one thing I would definitely say, like, to encourage people is, be super active and, like, definitely be friendly, like, make friends. And, you know, like, and definitely they're like, I got no problem, like, throwing Kyle Posey in a body bag every once in a while. Cause, like, right, nobody's going to go, like, none of my
him either, for the record. Posey deserves the most body bags out of anybody.
Absolutely. Like, he's off topic, but yeah, he tries to come with some shit sometimes, and you gotta get that back. Like, no, he deserves a body bag. So, like, I got no problem throwing like that, like, one of those guys, like, messing around with you guys or anything, or, like, you know, that sort of stuff. But, like, I'm not gonna let my whole timeline see that too. Like, I'm not gonna tweet something like some foolish stuff like that, you know, or like, especially at another, like, writer, you know, like somebody else that works with me, I would not interact with that way, right? You know, unless, like, I mean, if it's Alex, like, my roommate or one of the other fantasy guys, like, that's fine. But I'm not going to tweet like Daniel Jeremiah and try to throw him in a body bag or something like that. You know, you definitely have fun and make connections, because, you know, you never know when that's going to be also like a beneficial relationship too. Like, you know, like when you were starting out Draft Mecca, like I'm sure those like the guys that you were cool with were the ones that you wanted to pull in more, you know, and like obviously you guys weren't running like a site where you were paying a bunch of people, but people still knew that like, oh, well, Eric writes there, you know, or that's his site. So like that, like I said, your name holds clout regardless of whether what your status is. So then like people, that's why I wanted to write at Draft Mecca. So I was like, oh, well, you know, that could be a good thing for me too. So being friends with people like online and on Twitter and stuff, it's a beneficial thing and it makes it more fun. Like, cause like I said, it can be grueling. And so it's nice to open Twitter sometimes, like still be able to, even though like it's associated with my job now, it's nice to be able to open it up and like screw around with you guys too, like make fun of Justice or something, which is also necessary.
Yeah.
So, so yeah, I think that's it, like just not taking yourself too seriously is something that's important, even though like there are aspects of it that you have to do that. And you can't like, if you want to be professional or whatever, like you can't just go on Twitter and probably you can't drop a bunch of F-bombs and like that sort of stuff if that's what you want.
Like how you were talking about like going at Daniel Jeremiah, like you're not going to go to Daniel Jeremiah and be like, oh, look at your rankings like this from 2011. You don't know what the
right.
You know who you have those relationships with as they develop. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I know people who are still going to like, which is funny now that everybody's like, you know, which is like, please don't call me the wide receiver guru or like anything stupid like that. I'm not interested in that title. But like people that have followed me for years will bring up the fact that like, I liked Cordarrelle Patterson at one point, you know, like those people will do that, but I probably would like not, I wouldn't like, but if I was somebody that was following me and like, I didn't know me, I wouldn't bring the same thing up to me, but it's like my friends can do that. But yeah, it's different. And yeah, I mean, it's just kind of handling yourself with like common sense, honestly.
Right.
Like you've got friends, like you have friends in real life that you can't like, that, you know, they're sensitive about certain things. And yeah, so don't do that.
Yeah. And it's not like you're going to walk into the office and, you know, fire off on Sally, the receptionist, and try to ruin her life. You know what I mean? Like, you know who you have those relationships with and who you don't, and who's going to fucking report you to HR and everything of that nature.
So it
applies to Twitter when you're getting like into the business or into the field, so to speak.
It is kind of funny, like too, thinking about it in that sense of like an office, like, cause you do see people do that. And it's like, it's one of the biggest mistakes I think I see like younger writers do, or like people trying to make a name for themselves, is like attacking bigger analysts and all that stuff. Like it's in general, if you do that, you're not ready. Like you're not ready for this, in my opinion. Yeah. Because if you
the egg avatar that creates their account and immediately starts tweeting like big, huge accounts with random hateful shit, that it's like, okay, you're still a baby on here. Like you're new to this. You'll figure, like, hopefully you figure it out. I hope you learn the ropes quickly. Cause I think my first tweet was like, I actually do remember, cause somebody brought it up from my old account. My first tweet was like, it was in 2011, and it was to Greg Cassell saying some shit like, hey, you know what? I think Andrew Luck's actually kind of overrated. Cause it was when, it was the Gabbert and Luck class and all them, but he was tweeting something about Andrew Luck, I think. And you know, my first tweet to my dad talking about one of my most hated adversaries ever in Andrew Luck. So
there's layers.
Yeah. There is, right? Like there's multiple levels to that very, very first tweet. And most people, like, they look up their tweet history as they become a better Twitter user, so to speak. Like look back at their history and their first few tweets and everything, and just like how random and stupid you act when you first get on Twitter. And then, like I said, hopefully you kind of figure out the culture and it's like start having a little bit more, you don't need to be a fucking comedian and everything, but it's not the most serious thing in the world. And sports are not the most serious thing in the world. Like most of this stuff is really, 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 you know, insignificant and unimportant. So like, just try to, you know, it's like being at a sports bar, like just try to make relationships and have fun with people and be cool, like in an online space.
Yeah, it's really not that hard when you think about it, but definitely some people tend to make it hard. So I think kind of winding down here, we've hit on a lot of stuff that I really think was important and really want to hit on. And one thing I do want to say, and I know you mentioned it earlier, like this episode probably more so than other ones, like contains what I would say are things that might discourage people, but like that is again like kind of with Waldman's episode too, like that's definitely not the intention, is to like discourage people, but I do think it's important for people to realize, because you know, and again, I think I said this with Waldman and with other people too, like you get people asking, like I get people asking me, like, you know, how do I do what you do? And like the first, I think, like question I want to ask them is like, are you sure? Like, are you sure this is really what you want to do? Because you, like you mentioned, it's important to figure out, but like, can you pin, like, just kind of wrapping up here, but like, can you pinpoint like one moment or like one thing other, I know you've touched on a few, but like any others that like you saw something happen or something happened to you in the industry where you're just like, nah, this is definitely over kind of thing.
Not really for me personally. Well, last year I was kind of like doing some like doing projects for Matt like just a couple times a month, and I wrote this huge piece on Marcus Mariota. He actually had to like chop it into two separate articles because it was so long. And like when I actually do work, I'm very like I'm perfectionist about it, and I have like a very long, convoluted, dense writing style. So,
Same.
so like when I do something really big like that, like it takes a lot of energy out of me, so to speak. Like the Mariota piece took a lot out of me. I can say that, like as stupid as it sounds, like because it's just writing. It took a lot out of me mentally to kind of finish that piece and like talk about everything I wanted to talk about, and it was like it was really good. Like that's what it's one of the best pieces I've ever done, like that two-part series. But like I said, it took a lot out of me, and I was just like because he, like I said, Matt, like I know Matt's Waldman's never, he's never gassing me up, but he was like, you know, like people know who you are, and like you need to be doing this. And then there's still like there's always that side of you where it's just like, even though I know I'm good at this, I don't necessarily know if it's what I'm supposed to do. Like the Todd Marinovich 30 for 30, like the kid that was raised his whole life by his dad to like be this perfect quarterback prospect and everything, and he was just like, he started doing drugs and shit in college and everything, and ended up flaming out. And it was like that kind of like I never like I was never like my dad always let me be into football as ever much as I wanted. Like I was never like forced into it or anything, but like I empathized with like his story, and he said like just because you're really good at something doesn't mean that that's what you're necessarily supposed to do. So like I've just had those realizations throughout as I've done the work, and like people have tried to get me to do more, and I've always just kind of like never really fully committed. But as far as like seeing it play out, I remember a couple of weeks ago, Thomas Gower, he used to do a Titans blog. I think he's with Football Outsiders too, but he's a Titans fan, and he did a Titans blog for a long time. And like Matt Cassel signed with the Titans, and he tweeted like, if I was still doing like that Titans blog, like I would have to like carve out a portion of my night and like write a blog post about fucking Matt Cassel signing with the Titans. Like think of how just deadening, like I don't know, that is like all props to people that cover team blogs, like Alfie Crow, who runs the Jaguars blog on SB Nation. Like he's always given me an outlet for work whenever I wanted to write anything or anything like that. So the people that can do that and cover that cover that type of shit on the day to day, like I give them mad props. But it's yeah, like I can't imagine like being up at midnight and writing a post about Matt Cassel signing with my team. That just it sounds everything about that sounds, you know, horrible and deadening, and that's not the things that I like about football. You know what I mean? Like that's not what is, I don't get any enjoyment, any, even if somebody was paying me for that, like you couldn't pay me to fucking write something like that. And if that's something that you're not going to know, and like how you said, you ask people, are you sure you want to do this? You're not going to know until you actually go and do it. And that's the big thing. Like, I think that's been something that every single one of your guests has talked about, is more than anything, you can't get into this field or do anything or get noticed or anything of that nature. You got to fucking work. Like, you have to hopefully find something that you're doing different than everybody else, and that will take time. But you're going to have to write a bunch of shitty stuff, and your early stuff that you write is going to be bad. And you just, it's like any other craft or any other skill. Like, you got to put your hours in and hone your craft and get better at your craft. And you're not going to know if it's something that you want to do long term until you actually sit there and do that. And if you can, if you are still in love with the boring and the tediousness and everything, then it's probably something for you. If it's something that you kind of are like, I liked this better when it was kind of on the side and I can come and go to it as I pleased, then it's probably not something for you to do long term. And that's not the end of the world, because like I said, like, working in sports is, I mean, it's fun and it's entertaining and everything, but it's not the most important. There are more important things out there, and your life path is eventually going to take you where you're supposed to be anyways.
I couldn't say that better myself. Because I love my job, like, and this is, you know, my dream come true in many ways. Like, I'm 24 years old. Like, you know, don't rule out and it could happen. Like, it could happen to any of us. Like, don't rule out the fact that, like, in 10 years, like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I don't want to be, you know, football media or whatever 10 years from now, that sort of stuff. Like, be open to that possibility, because it's definitely something that can happen. But I think for tonight, it's pretty much all we've got. Eric, if there's anything else you want to shout out, you know, convey to the audience before you get out of here, just the floor is yours.
Just like to reiterate, my intention is not to discourage anybody. I think everybody should chase the things that they think that they want to do. My perspective is very different from others. It always has been. And you're, like I said, you're not going to know until you actually chase it and try to do that. And I'm a big proponent of that. Like, I think that the Sigmund actually talked about this on his episode, I think, is that when you actually do start working towards things and everything, like, the life will kind of lead you to the right. Like, you still have to go through the doors, but life will kind of lead you to the right doors. You know what I mean? So if this is really something that you guys want to pursue, definitely pursue it. Chill the fuck out on Twitter, everybody. Like, it, relax. It's a fun place. And yeah, I mean, I really don't, I think I've talked my ass off. I really don't have much else to say. Shout out to Matt Waldman, like I said, for always giving me a home and a place to write. He's been one of my big inspirations with this entire little stupid cottage industry that we have. So thank you to you too for having me on and for writing for my stupid site that I used to have. It's very, very cool to see like how your career has gone and progressed and everything like that. And you are like, you're an awesome example of, like I said, just work and you'll eventually find the thing that you can do that other people can't do. And like, and things will, not that that will be the only thing you ever do, is that will kind of lead you to get noticed and enhancing like your work portfolio, so to speak. And if you want to get into the NFL, get the fuck off of Twitter and go try to get a GA job. And that's basically it.
Yeah. Oddly enough, NFL teams are not scrolling, you know, through the timeline or not scrolling through, you know, people's mentions looking for the best takes.
They pay attention more than they will let on or what people think. And they're kind of aware of what goes on. I mean, just as like a little anecdote wrapping up, like there's that, the Play the Draft site, which is like the draft stock market website that all the dorky draft Knicks play. That's the Bengals were like an investor and a co-owner of that.
Yeah.
And like I said, NFL teams pay attention, but they're not scouring Twitter for, you know, their next scouting intern.
Yeah.
There's different avenues to take for different areas of the business that you want to get into. So
that is definitely true.
Yep.
But good luck
to all of you and in your endeavors. I hope you find your dreams working in this little football world.
And if not, you know, like we've been saying, life will reveal the path to you. But yeah, so that's pretty much all from us tonight. Again, I really want to thank Eric for coming on. I'm not going to shout out his Twitter handle since he's sitting comfortably at his level of followers. And I actually forget to do it for everybody, so I might as well play it even. But yeah, so if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on iTunes. Leave a rating or a review. You know, like we were saying earlier, this is that shameless self-promotion that you have to do, because nothing makes me feel stupider than asking you guys to do that. But it does help, you know, and the feedback has been great to the show, and I'm looking forward to getting some more guests on. And hey, if you've listened this far, like, and you have somebody that, like, in your head that you want me to get on that I haven't had on, give me some suggestions, because like there are so many that I want to do. So feel free to, you know, mention me on Twitter and be like, hey, get this guy on your show or get this girl on your show. Like, especially we need some more people. So again, I want to thank you guys for listening, and I hope you learned something today.